also like to thank my co-authors on this, Marsha Ori, Angie Wade, Wojtek, and Terry Bosry at the back. And I can say Wojtek's last name, maybe. Hudzko Zajko. We're doing better? We're getting there. Okay. And then this may look like a slide you've already seen before. These are our Learning Network partners, and they're many of the same people that you've seen before. The Health Science Center with the School of Rural Public Health, and that's one of the partners. The Aging Initiative through the Environmental Protection Agency. The Active for Life program. The Learning Network is actually part of the Active for Life program. The Center for Disease Control, both through their PRC program, the Prevention Research Centers, of which our school is one. We're the Center for Community Health Development, and also through the HON Network, which you've heard a good bit about today. NCOA is one of our partners, and then lastly, but not least important, is the National Blueprint, and I'd like to thank Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for their support of our project. One of the things that we found was that oftentimes communities are really concerned about the health of their adults in their community and aging adults, but they're unaware of best practices or unsure how to implement those practices around activity programming or enhancing environments so that they become more healthy. And so we had a concept of bringing together people who were interested in creating healthy communities by bridging research and practice through an innovative approach of e-collaboration. What has happened is that the focus of this project has grown significantly since it was initiated, and we've sort of begun marrying the active living component, the active aging component, and the smart growth component that you heard about from Kathy Sykes, because it's so hard, it's so difficult to tease these two things apart. And yet, most of the active aging people don't have much involvement with the environmental smart growth folks, and the smart growth folks have never thought about active aging. So it's been really interesting to see the level of interest and enthusiasm for putting these two ideas together. The purpose is to share lessons from both translational research and best practices. So we're talking about evidence-based as well as practices that are identified as best practices because they contain certain components. We're going to serve as a resource for communities. Our target audience is not seniors and it's not academicians, but it's the communities who are interested in implementing the research that's out there and the information that's out there. We want to disseminate information about active aging and healthy communities, and we want to provide a forum for interactions across different sectors. We'd like for the smart growth people to be able to talk to some of the active aging people. So the process was to first gather information through the community discussion groups, open-ended surveys, and networking with the experts. Many of you are here in this room. We worked to identify user needs and preferences. This was a little difficult. There were some people that thought this was the wrong way to go about it because we went at it open-ended. Anything goes, tell us what you want. Some people wanted a job bulletin board, and we got all sorts of different kinds of suggestions. But ultimately, we found out not what people wanted from a list that we provided, but what they wanted based on what their own personal experiences were. And after a while, we started hearing the same themes over and over again. We want to hear about best practices. We want to know how you take an evidence-based program and implement it in the community. How can you make changes to that program? How can you keep the key points of the program, you know, what's acceptable and what's not, in making changes to evidence-based programs? Cost-benefit analysis was one of the things that they requested. I can't think of any others right now. I think we'll get to some more in a little bit. So then once we identified needs and preferences, we've begun to develop content and features to match their specified needs. And then hopefully we'll be able to evaluate and respond to the findings that we get. We're still at a development phase. So Kathy talked about aging in the built environment, And we just, there's some questions, you know, how does the environment influence health-related behaviors, and what does it take to make the environment a healthier place for people of all ages? One of the things that we've found through discussions with lots of people is that environmental adaptations that are made for seniors generally will positively impact anyone in the community. If you build a walking trail, little kids can ride their trikes while mom and dad walk. If you build a playground, it limits the utilization by a wider age spectrum in the community. So we've begun, I told you we'd widened our focus. We're beginning to look at this not only as creating healthier neighborhoods and environments for aging activity, but also for activity for people of all different ages. And then what is unique about the environmental influences specifically for older people? And safety is an issue that has come up numerous times. So one of the things that we've done is we've formed several partnerships. This has enabled us to leverage our resources and literally to reach out in ways that we hadn't initially anticipated. We recognize that there was a lack of awareness about the synergies that can be achieved by marrying smart growth and active aging, and so we worked together with the Environmental Protection Agency and many other people. Kathy gave you a list of their partners, to develop a national recognition award program so that we could recognize communities that are promoting the health and well-being of older adults through activity program and also through smart growth, implementing smart growth principles. So this is a project that I think Kathy told you about, and you can go to our website and get information about this program. And as we get results from the first round of awards, we'll have that information up on our website also. One of the things we didn't want to do with this website was to reinvent the wheel. So a lot of what you'll find on there now is links to other organizations and groups that are doing similar information, so you can get the information independently. Something happened to this slide. Well, one of the things, you know, Marsha Ori, think globally and act locally. We decided that our community was a wonderful place to be, to try to apply for one of these awards. Well, it turned out not to be the simple process that we had initially envisioned, but we utilized our local council of governments, which is a quasi-governmental organization, as the applicant organization. We looked at a 7-county region in Central Texas. One of the counties is peri-urban. The other 6 are very rural counties, as you can see from some of these pictures. And we looked at 5 projects that are already in place and are beginning to interact with one another to coordinate active aging and smart growth. One of the first things we looked at was the Brazos Valley Health Status Assessment, which included measures of exercise, how much people got, how far away they lived from exercise opportunities or activity opportunities. It also looked at chronic disease, and since demographics were collected, we were able to break those down by age. The second program that we incorporated was the Area Agency on Aging and their transportation program, which started out as a volunteer-driven van program. The vans were then turned over to, and you can see, I think, in the upper right-hand corner, these vans are driven by volunteers, almost exclusively seniors themselves, many of them who have used the services. And so it's providing not only transportation to seniors, prioritized, and people with disabilities, but also providing meaningful opportunities for the seniors to do volunteer work in their specific communities. The physical activity census through Active Options, which you just heard all about from Serena. Wolf Pin Creek Corridor is a park. I'm losing my train of thought. But it's just a development of a park area that is very close to the mall. It's very central to, so that many seniors are able to access it easily. It's well lit. There are benches for resting, and it was the sidewalks and walking trails are very wide, so people who have disabilities can use wheelchairs or people can walk side by side more easily. So this project, the development of this corridor, was one of our projects. And then the last one that you can't see was the downtown Bryan revitalization. This is one of the two larger cities in the area. I think you can see where the clock is. They've totally revitalized downtown with maintaining the historical flavor of downtown and yet making it safer. They've planted lots of shade trees because in Central Texas it's hot, and if you're going to have people walking, you've got to provide shady spots for them. There are also benches for resting. We're not living in a community or an area where there are very many opportunities for walking, and so having one that's and people aren't used to going out and going to a downtown area and walking. What they're used to is driving to one store and parking, and then driving to the next store and parking, and driving to the next store and parking. And so having the benches and having the downtown area laid out like it is will encourage more people to utilize that for physical activity, we hope. We've also partnered with the Centers for Disease Control Healthy Aging Network, and we realize that there are limited opportunities for people to learn about implementing and disseminating or evaluating evidence-based health programs, and they're going to be developing in the process of developing a blueprint for evaluating evidence-based health programming for older adults. And the results of that curriculum that will be developed will be housed on our website, so you can look forward to seeing that. That's in progress right now. Another partnership we've had was with the National Blueprint and NCOA, and we recognize that communities want to use best practices but require help or assistance in selecting, implementing, and or evaluating those practices. And so there was a meeting held that brought people at all different levels, from the local level to the state level to the national level, and also in different sectors, both private and public and commercial sectors, together to identify and make recommendations on how to implement best practice programs or principles. And there will be a report, and this too will be up on our website when it's ready. If you have some more questions, you can ask Wojtek about that one. So what are some of the products that we've developed? Well, we do have a website that's up and going, and you should see lots of changes in it over the next couple of months. We are now publishing or co-branding a newsletter with the National Blueprint Office. We are involved with the National Recognition Award with the APA. That's out. It's launched. We had an article in the Texas Public Health Association Journal this month, I think, and the best practices report with the National Blueprint and NCOA is in progress. So what are some of the challenges? We promised to tell you about the challenges and successes of this program. Well, probably the biggest challenge for me is time, because everything takes longer than you expect it will, and you're going to run into problems and have to deal with that, and have to deal with the people responding slowly to you, people in your program getting sick, and some of those other little things. Building consensus has been another challenge for us, because when you're trying to work collaboratively with partners, you can't just make all the decisions yourself, so you have to go through the process of working to achieve consensus. And it doesn't mean it's difficult or hard, it just takes time and it's challenging. And in fact, I would say it's not so difficult as it is rewarding. When you get there, you have a sense that what you've done is just what was needed. We're working with open source software, which is really an interesting it's an interesting way to do business. This stuff is non-commercial software, and we're waiting currently for an update on one of the major programs that we're working with. A changing environment. Since we started the program even a couple of years ago, I think there's a whole lot more recognition of active aging, a lot more people interested in it and in the environment, and working with these things together, and therefore the response to what people's needs are is changing all the time. So it's hard I think it's challenging. I hate to use the word hard. It's challenging to meet those needs, those changing needs as they change. But we're doing what we can to do that. Another thing that challenges that we've had is finding our niche in the lots of websites out there, and we don't want to recreate the wheel. We want to be something different that people can go to. And then funding priorities, I think, are changing in some degree away from active aging into some other areas, such as obesity. Our successes is that we've been able to leverage resources through networking and existing partnerships. We have significantly expanded our focus and target audience, and some of the interested constituencies include the Aging Service Network, commercial entities, municipal planning groups, wellness professionals, and many other. City and county governments are interested in what we're doing. And the next steps will be to implement a moderated bulletin board, to develop specific content for the website, to provide a vehicle for sharing stories, because we anticipate that these stories will be a big part of the project, and then to develop a sustainability plan. And last but not least, we want to hear from you, because this is user-driven and you all will be some of the users of the project. And so if there's something you want to see or something that, and I don't just want you to tell us what you want to see, I want to know what you have to share with us, because this is the way we'll get the information out to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to all the presenters. I thought that was a fabulous set of presentations. About 6 years ago, approximately 50 organizations gathered in Washington, D.C. to try to imagine what they could do together to increase the likelihood of older adults being more physically active. And my program officer, Terry Bazzari, sitting at the back here, must be, I don't know, just so happy to see so much fertile coalition building that really has emerged over the last 5 or 6 years. So the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation pulled together these organizations and challenged them to develop strategies that would build coalitions to get older people more physically active. And the National Blueprint process identified 18 strategies in five major areas: media and communications, medical systems, public policy, research, and homes and communities. Today you've heard about efforts from a variety of organizations, each of which are a Blueprint signatory organizations, each of which has made a substantive contribution to advancing the strategies that the Blueprint has identified. So whether we're talking about Active for Life or the National Council on the Aging or some of our academic partners like the University of Illinois, I think what you're seeing is a commitment from organizations around the country to go out and work with partners to try and make a difference in accordance with a cohesive and coordinated strategic plan. And when we started out in this initiative, Robert Wood Johnson did a survey of what is out there right now at about the year 2000, and they concluded that there was a lot of redundancy, there was a lack of coordination, and there were not organizations working together to achieve a common goal. So some of the things that have emerged since the first Blueprint meeting in 2001, the Administration on Aging's evidence-based prevention demonstration projects have really launched prevention as a major focus of what the administration of aging is trying to do under the Older Americans Act. Now, that might not sound especially extraordinary for people working in the field of public health, but for those of us who work in gerontology and geriatrics, we're used to thinking in terms of care provision as opposed to promoting prevention and independence. And that, I think, really has been a seismic shift in philosophy and thinking. And the National Council on the Aging has been lockstep walking with the Administration on Aging and Josefina Carbonell to bring about that change. Now, the degree to which it's going to make a huge impact on the public is going to depend on whether the dollars follow the philosophy and we're going to be able to fund those kinds of programs. Another hugely successful partnership is the EPA-CDC President's Council for Physical Fitness Partnership that brought you the coalition of smart growth and physical activity. I mean, we never imagined that we would be able to get the Environmental Protection Agency so heavily involved and invested in issues related to promoting physical activity and linking it to smart growth. And I think it's a good example of what can happen when organizations and agencies talk with one another and do things in collaboration instead of trying to compete for the limelight. So I don't know what more I can say except that the kinds of community programs that you have heard about here are operating at the national, state, and local level. Certainly, we have a long way to go before these kinds of programs are available nationwide for most older Americans. But nonetheless, we do have pockets of excellence. We have demonstration projects that are functioning in virtually all states and all regions of the country. And I think that we have to utilize the exemplary best practice programs and find a way to build on those kind of oases of excellence so that we have more older Americans exposed not only to excellent programs and opportunities but also to environments that will enable people to make healthy choices in their lives. So thank you. May even exceed the GDP.
wonderful intergenerational community-based activity, and what I like about it is it doesn't only focus on physical activity, but it has components of social and intellectual wellness associated with it, too.
Sure. Let me exactly talk with them, then we'll go to Catherine. Do you want to...
Well, I just wanted to go back to the topic that has been kind of going around, and that is that I think part of the solution is finding new partners and leveraging the resources that we do have. When I went to the Smart Growth Conference, I was amazed at the people from the water treatment. The water treatment people that are doing environmentally friendly water things were really interested in finding ways to incorporate walking trails around some of these new marsh areas and ways that they could incorporate active aging. And the more we talk to them, the kids start coming up. How can we also improve the facilities so that they can be used by people of all ages? And that's not a partner I had ever thought we would bring into this conversation.
Terrific. The man in the front, can you introduce yourself?
John Blackmore produces the TV series Perils for Pedestrians. While we're meeting here, the Safe Houses School National Partnership is meeting up in Dearborn, Michigan. What sort of interaction has there been between the folks working with active aging and the Safe House School groups, the National Partnership is practically brand new. Has there been that interaction yet?
The National Blueprint funded 20 community-based projects, a number of which involved kind of walking school bus projects and different kind of communications that we've had. Transforming it from sort of a flat green lawn are shaded and cool and interesting places to sit and have a conversation. And we are right now breaking ground on the first one of these in Champaign, Illinois, but our plan is we've identified a site in the south side of Chicago at a HUD-funded building. So the sense is you can do this for about twice the cost of typical landscaping. So it's not very expensive, and the goal is to get people to get out of the air conditioning and spend more time outside.
give the panelists and speakers